What you are about to hear is part two of a two-part The Testing Show series on the state of the testing practice. If you have not listened to part one, we encourage you to pause, go listen to part one, and then come back and listen to this episode. Of course, you may enjoy the feeling of jumping into a story partway through. After all, that's how many of us first experienced Star Wars. In any case, we hope you enjoy part two of The State of the Testing Practice with Alex Schladebeck and Joel Montvilisky.
This show is sponsored by Qualitest. Deploy software that you and your customers trust with Qualitest Testing and Business Assurance Services. Learn more about Qualitest at qualitestgroup.com.
I wanted to cover one more topic, and that is the regression test process. How long does it typically take, and how often is it between releases? It's so hard to measure, so maybe we can just give some data points. My last company it was, at my current company it is, and hopefully that's changing over time. For all my clients, I'm seeing releasing more often and finding ways to compress that time, and tooling is part of that. Maybe we could just give a couple examples.
I can really quickly talk about what I built with Bitly. I built a Python Selenium suite, and when it got to a point where it was testing enough things that were deemed worth running the thing in CI, which wasn't long, it was probably like a 2-minute test run, so the basic cases, we released multiple times a day. I had two things, and I had tests that were just tagged for running every single time we released something, and then I had the tests that didn't need to be run every single time, but could be run multiple times a day. So I wrote a Jenkins job for those tests, and they ran asynchronously throughout the day. The main tests ran every time that we wanted to deploy code to production. We would deploy to production anywhere between 4 to 10 times a day, depending on what was happening. The other caveat was that I got 10 minutes because unit tests and everything had to run. So it really required some serious decisions to be made about what was absolutely critical to test before something went to production versus what needed to be tested but could wait too. I actually had my whole suite, it was able to run in 6 minutes. It was pretty solid and pretty steady. We also had a lot of developers that worked on that as they were developing. If they changed something, they actually were responsible for making sure their change didn't break the test. And if it broke the front end test, they had to fix it and commit the fix. That was a big help in maintenance because I was the only tester. That's kind of how we worked that out and ran that. It is something that even though I'm not there, I'm aware that they're still using at this point in time. And I've not been there since September. At least it has some short residual value. But Salesforce, it's a little bit different because we have a 2-week release cadence, and I am not the main writer of the automated tests, so I'm actually the person who is responsible for manual in-depth exploratory testing. So regression-wise, the current system is to run through a regression during release. We have a release to a sandbox environment, and then we have a week in that environment before we release to production. The first thing that I do is to run the automated test and go through and look at things and test things that need my attention, which there are a few things that can't be automated very well. So going in and doing those things before we push to sandbox, when we have something ready, but before we push it to that sandbox space. The reason that's important is we are open and our customers all have access to that sandbox space. They can try it, they can play with it, that kind of a thing. So we want to make sure that that's at least the major pieces are working for them. And then during the week, I do major exploratory testing when it's in that environment, because that's the closest thing to production that we have, then it gets pushed to production. I'm looking to streamline that process and do as much of the testing as I can that's possible to do in pre-production, but that involves a lot of different moves culturally. We've got great feedback from the developers, which is awesome. It's just trying things, trying and failing and trying again until we have a process that everybody's feeling really good about.
Yeah, I think that that's more common to see. we have a large system with integrated parts, and if you change one thing here, it might break something else there. So we need this regression testy process. So we release about every 2 weeks. Most of the companies I work with are somewhere in that window. Some can do it better and some can do it worse. Some of it's architecture, like they have a bunch of PHP pages that are all separated and isolated. You can deploy as often as you want. Alex, how does it work for you?
We're in the interesting situation that a lot of the work we do is for large concerns. So even if we could release faster, our release cycles are dictated mostly by, no, we want it then, and then is in a couple of months. So there's a customer side thing on that. What we are doing a lot of, though, is trying to make sure that even if the customer's release isn't necessarily planned for the next month or two, that we're making sure that the test phase that the customer is going to do anyway, because they're big customers, that they don't find anything that's going to throw us back. What we're doing a lot of is making sure that, yes, there's automation going on various levels, obviously UI automation as well. And with that, we've been working more and more on getting developers and testers working together in the teams on things like that, partially because one tester in a team, for example, is never going to be able to automate and test and do and check and be at every meeting and do everything against X developers, but also because it makes sense to have the whole team thinking about that. We've been doing a lot more in the role of the tester. There's a lot more coaching and strategizing and asking questions and showing and supporting to make sure that the whole team is working towards things like that. The other thing that we've been introducing is that when we say, okay, here is the build that your people are going to be able to test, we introduced exploratory testing days with the whole development team and with customers as well. This was something I did a few workshops with our developers and testers. I think it was at the beginning of last year. Since then, I've been noticing a lot more days like that going on where the customers and the developers and the testers are all sitting together. That's just fantastic to see. It means that the team is getting feedback on what kind of errors the customers still find even after we think we've tested it. The customers are seeing that we're interested in getting their feedback and that we do things about the feedback. Of course, in the best case scenario, they don't find anything horrific and think, hey, that was a really good job. And are more likely to then maybe say, okay, we'll trust you to release quicker if we want a different feature or a new feature more quickly than we'd planned. The release cycles in a lot of projects are still fairly long, but we tend to put things in place such that if that had to not be the case, we could release much more quickly than we do at the moment. In other stuff, on the open source project that we work on, we've moved from 6-month release phases to being able to release after every sprint. That's partially through more automation, but also doing a lot more exploratory testing and also putting things in place that make it possible for us to re-release quickly, even if we do find something. It's not saying, ah, someone else will find it. It's just doing the risk-based, well, we think we've looked at everything that could possibly go horribly wrong. And if something now does go wrong that we don't like, it's okay because we can patch it quickly. Getting the feedback about whether it's valuable or not is, in our context for this thing, more valuable than making sure that we got rid of every tiny little thing that we could possibly find. There, we're much more free to deal with the process how we like it because it's an open source tool and there's no one customer behind it. The same principles apply. The theory is that if big customers with long release phases wanted to move to more frequent things, then we'd have the things in place for doing that. It's a tough and long process, though. I remember that not all of the developers were particularly thrilled about the idea of having some exploratory testing workshops, to put it mildly.
Thanks, Alex. Justin?
This is something I do every day. I work on a UI automation project. I have a suite of tests that takes about 2.5 hours to run. I run it on 3 different environments every night. So every morning, I have a report back on what broke from the previous day's changes. It's pretty simple. Well, it's not simple. Maintaining a UI automation suite is kind of like committing the rest of your life to refactoring UI tests. But it works in this context because the product is fairly legacy and new changes tend to introduce new problems. At the same time, the UI doesn't change significantly daily or weekly or monthly. That's sort of what it's like. And we release quarterly. So generally, before a release, we might do a little more hands-on investigation. But for me, every day is hands-on exploration based on the reports of the test. So it's not like I'm just looking at reports from a CI system every day. There's actually hands-on investigation in the software.
Well, that's interesting. The purpose of the test run, part of it is to give you a jumping-off point for you to look for problems.
Yeah. It's not really automated testing. It's more like a report triggering somebody to investigate a particular thing and do follow-up testing.
That's what it is very often. We just don't talk about that often enough.
Yeah.
I seem to recall you had a bunch of branches.
We have branches for just about every customer, and we also have branches for specific configurations for customers. The environment aspect of this is kind of complicated. We just select particular environments to run the tests on based on what's important or what we're working on at the time. Right now, it's just three environments.
Great. Thanks. I've worked with a bunch of different companies. Most common with the larger ones, they customize the release test process to the product. So if it's small, you can just test everything in an hour because it's just a report generator. You can release it as often as you want. And if it's longer, they usually develop some sort of coverage model, which I think we should talk about, and then try to fill in the coverage model until we run out of time. Sometimes the tools help us to fill that out more quickly. I wish Michael was here. We could talk about social text. I left social text in 2011. They still use the same testing framework. It was a combination of running unit tests, Selenium tests on all the browsers. Some browsers can't test all the test cases because it doesn't work, with a visual slideshow with exploration, rechecking some of the newest stories. That process typically took 3 days, and they could release every 2 weeks. I understand they've tightened that process up through the cloud. When you test a story now, they actually go and they run all the Sunshine test cases right before you test that story, so it finds breakages earlier than what we used to do.
Through the magic of podcast alchemy, I can join this conversation too. Well, okay, not really, but I am adding these comments in post. So yes, what Matt described is close. We have a long-lived automation framework that is very closely coupled with our product. It makes our testing process interesting, to say the least. It also means our automation framework has a unique dialect as compared to others. I wouldn't even know how to begin to describe that, to be honest. We have three sets of tests that we run. We run a typical unit test suite. We have a series of integration tests that we refer to as WikiD tests. We also have end-to-end Selenium tests that we call WikiQ tests. As you might guess from the names, the unit and WikiD tests are written by the programmers on the development team, and the WikiQ tests are written by the testing team. These tests used to take us a day and a half to run serially, so we had a subset that we called Sunshine test cases that were our sanity tests. If those failed, it was back to the drawing board. Now, we run all of the tests, that's unit, WikiD, and WikiQ, in parallel, through Jenkins and using AWS. Each test runs in its entirety, and it takes about an hour and 20 minutes. That means we have the capacity to do several builds each day and push multiple times a day. More accurately, we tend to push daily or a few times a week to our staging environment, but we cut our regular releases once a month. In addition to pushing a completed build to a set of test servers, we run through what we call a release burndown. That also includes a range of exploratory tests that we can consider that are not automated and are more suggested than scripted. We know the areas we need to cover, but how we cover them is left up to us and our own creativity. So far, the process works well. We do find that because of such a long-lived framework, we do at times make a bunch of changes due to updating modules on our product, and those changes can be time-consuming. Still, overall, the system has proven to be remarkably stable for over 10 years. And now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
We actually do something, I think that it's between what you're saying that Michael is doing to what Alex was actually talking about of the risk-based type of approach. We do release in practice test between 2 to 3 times a week. It really depends on what we're releasing. We have like a minimal amount of sanity that we need to run. We don't have extremely large amount of regression because just as Alex says, we're very good at understanding if actually something broke that was under the radar that we were actually testing to fix it very, very quickly. We're also a SaaS product, and being a SaaS product that is constantly monitored, it makes it a lot easier. We do have a cycle that involves a lot of tester developer on specific risk areas, meaning whenever we're going to be releasing something, we look into, okay, so what was done in there? We do a very thorough risk analysis on what needs to be tested. And then we go about almost everything manually, because the automation is going to be doing the sanity and it's going to be checking for all those sunny day scenarios. But most of the actual hard testing is going to be done by those guys who know that they need to release. And we usually have between half a day and a day to release it. It's based a lot on risk testing, and it's based on the fact that if something goes bad, then usually we know how to fix it very, very quickly. Trying to look into other companies that I've worked with in the last 6 months or so, I was actually surprised seeing how much people are relying on still one-week regression phases that are mostly done manually. You can have people working on three-week sprints that the last week, they call it sometimes hardening, they call it sometimes, I don't know, regression testing, but they're still doing a lot of regression tests manually, where you have six guys just going over tons of scripts, manual scripts, just making sure they can release the product. And again, I thought that was behind us, but I was surprised to still see it out there, at least so frequently.
Yeah, I see that too. What I like to do is try to come up with a coverage model and then at least describing what we've covered. I think most testers can get beyond scripts for anything but the most scientifically complex of software. And even then, the scripts should become how to set up specific problem and how to know specific answer. But yeah, real common. I'd like to move to just testing all the time. What would happen if instead of a one-week regression testing, we just tested all the time and we just recognized that there's no such thing as a candidate build anymore? We're going to find as many bugs as we can in the time that we have. And the release process is a day, and that's just burning down the worst of the stuff. And we actually regression test every day for 2 hours. For a team like that, at that place of low tooling and high failure demand, would that be a good idea?
I think that one of the things that would happen in a team situation, and I've seen teams that want to try and do this, where they're saying, okay, let's do a hardening week at the end of the sprint. It would be hard for them to realize that taking that away might mean that they might not get as many stories done in the sense of development done. And I use that with all of the air quotes that I can muster. There's this idea, especially in teams that are working like that, well, if it's developed, it's fine. It just now needs to be tested. And the testing is taking away necessary development time. If you say, okay, we're going to test all of the time, then that probably means that more people are going to be testing, unless you want to test less, which would be another option. But that's, again, you'd have to approach that in a risk-based way. That can be something that's hard to sell to the team, maybe hard to sell to the product owner, possibly hard to sell to the customer, which I think is a very sad thing. But I think that that's one of the things that happened once the team has accepted that and the customers realize that what they get out of that is probably better than just trying to test everything in the last week. That's a good thing that can come out of that. We actually moved to 0-day release phases in one team, and they worked very well. We now do a 1-day release phase because in one of the 0-day release phases, we released with a terrible, terrible blocker. It was an unknown unknown. More testing for things that we knew about would not have found it. We may have found it by accident in another way, but it was one of those comes out of the blue, hits you and sidelines you. So now that made us a bit more careful. So we say, okay, we are going to have a 1-day release phase where everyone on a high level looks at things to make sure that things are making sense, that we haven't done anything really embarrassing, that hopefully by exploring something like that comes up again, that we find it before we release. That's what can come out of that. And that's beneficial for the customers, but it is terrifying to do that kind of release for the first time.
Yeah, oh, I agree. And I was thinking about doing it the other way. So you usually have 5 days, you have 40 hours of testing. Six people, but let's ignore the six people.
Okay.
40 hours per tester. And we're flipping that up. So in week one and week two, we do 2 hours a day. That is 10 hours a week. And week three, we do 2 hours a day. Plus you have 8-hour regression test process. So if you did that, you'd actually get in 20, 28, 32 hours of testing. Not quite as many as the 40 you get for regression. But then basically you get, instead of 2 weeks of development and then bug fixing, you get 2.5 weeks of development.
I think that's the theory. I think that the testing would find problems sooner that we realize that we need to talk more about.
Yep.
I think that's...
And that's good, right?
Yes, yeah. I'm all for that. But I think that that would be the problem for the team, that they would go, no, this isn't working because it's costing us so much more time. It's blocking us while we were trying to develop.
You're paying for velocity earlier, right? You're feeling the pain earlier. Having a testing phase allows you to defer pain and make the appearance of progress.
Yes. And it also allows you to then make the really, really tough decisions that basically are along the lines of, well, we don't have any time to fix this, so we're releasing anyway.
Yeah, right.
If you find the error earlier, then you do have time to fix it, but you have to prioritize it over other things that might be happening.
This would provide you with information faster that was more accurate, that you could make more actionable decisions, which would not provide you with convenient corner cutting excuses that you get when you found the problems at the end that allow you to ship bad quality.
And I think that's a good thing, but I think it's very difficult for people to learn to do.
Right. They're like super awkward. People don't like change and they don't like super awkward. And by the way, this strategy is one that I've recommended many times and customers are reluctant to take it up. I think that's a big part of why. Before we go, what have you been up to lately and where can people hear more about you and what you're doing? Jess and Justin are on the show all the time, but do you have anything new? Maybe Jess can point us to the open source code for Salesforce.
Yeah, if you just search Salesforce Foundation in GitHub, you will find all of the open repos. That includes all of the open projects that we have, as well as the test code for those open projects.
Please email me and Michael a link. We'll get in the show notes.
Cool.
Anything new, Justin?
I'm still working on CAST 2017 in Nashville. The CFP is open until February 20th, I believe. If you're interested in speaking at CAST, you can find out about that at associationforsoftwaretesting.org.
Thanks, Joel.
Well, actually, we had a couple of pretty cool projects. We had back in November the first online test conf that we run. It was actually a pretty cool conference. Everything was online. And again, what we tried to do differently was instead of having a regular conference that it's also being transmitted, where the speakers are actually mostly talking with the guys in front of them, then we did it online and we had a lot of different types of interactions. Actually went pretty well. Big of a feedback and request that we're actually planning already the second one. It's going to be in June 2017. We're running right now the state of testing survey and then we'll have the report. Other than that, preparing for conferences. I'm going to be speaking on Star East, I think, on May, and there might be a couple of meetups in the UK over in February. And again, just plain old working and trying to keep up to date with what's going on outside.
Okay. And Alex.
One of the things that we've just done that's exciting here at BraidX is to release the new version of the open source tool that we work on called Jubula. That's now available in 8.4. So that's cool, and it's UI testing, and we like it. The other thing that I'm working on at the moment is obviously getting used to the new role. I think that, well, that's a very personal thing. That's going to be some fun months learning what's new and what stays the same. In terms of conferences, I'm going to be talking at the European Testing Conference in February in Finland, which I'm totally excited about. I'm at the OOP, which is the Object-Oriented Programming Conference in Munich at the end of January. And I'm on the program committee for Eurostar. I'm really excited to be able to work with some other cool people on the program committee for that.
That's a lot. Great. Thanks, everybody, for being on the show. Any closing thoughts?
I enjoyed being here. Thank you.
Yeah, it was actually quite a cool experience, guys. Thanks for inviting us.
I really enjoy this. I think we actually got real, which is increasingly important in a sort of superficial and best practice-y world. So thank you for your time, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks, Matt.
Thanks, everybody.
Later. Bye, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Testing Show, sponsored by Qualitest. For more information, please see www.qualitestgroup.com. Do you have questions? Or is there a topic or an idea you'd like to have covered? Please email us at thetestingshow@qualitestgroup.com, and we will answer questions we receive on air.